Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Professional athletes aren't the only ones taking hard knocks playing sports. High school and college students are experiencing an increase in injuries, and concussions are of particular concern. While football may be in the headlines, for girls in high school, soccer is the most dangerous sport. Every year, 300,000 high school students suffer from concussions. Whether it's a child or adult who's injured, concussions can result in long-term impairment.
Joining us with an update on concussion diagnosis, treatment, and prevention is one of the world's top experts. Dr. Barry Kosofsky is director of the Pediatric Concussion Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian Hospital, where he's also professor of pediatrics and chief of the Division of Pediatric Neurology.
Dr. Kosofsky, thank you for coming on the show.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me.
What exactly is a concussion?
A concussion is a blow to the head that in some way impairs function, and it's a vague definition. And it's a vague diagnosis because no two concussions are the same. The same hit can have different effects on different people. But all it means is your head takes a knock and somehow you're impacted in terms of your subsequent symptoms and behavior.
What is taking place in the brain when a person receives that hit?
There's two kinds of injuries we think about. In the old days, we talk about coup contra coup, which means that the head, the brain is like custard in consistency, and it's floating in the skull. So when there's a sudden impact, the custard hits the bone because the fluid that surrounds it is not sufficiently protective. That causes the direct injury, usually at the front of the brain or the front of the temporal poles, where the surface of the brain hits the bony skull. The contra coup is then there's a rebound, and the opposite side of the brain will sometimes have that same superficial surface injury. What we've learned recently is there's a deeper injury to the fibers in the brain called shear or stretch, or what the doctors call diffuse axonal injury, DAI. That can be delayed in its appearance, and that's a consequence of the brain being like a stalk of broccoli. So the broccoli, the head of the broccoli, is called the cortex, and the stalk is called the brainstem. And when there's inertia, the stalk stays in position, and the flower moves, and the fibers where the stalk meets the flower get stretched. And that's called white matter injury. So the superficial injury is the gray matter, the surface of the brain, and the deeper injury is the white matter, the fibers that connect the different brain regions.
What about recovery from injuries in the gray matter versus injuries in the white matter?
So that's an excellent question. We used to worry a lot about the gray. And the gray injuries you can see on CAT scan and MRI, and that's why people would do imaging quickly. But it turns out it's a very small fraction of patients that have that gray matter injury. The white matter injury, for the most part, to answer your question, the gray matter injury will get better. Sometimes there is permanent structural injury to the surface of the brain, and that's usually with moderate and severe traumatic brain injury. But concussion, which we consider mild brain injury, mild traumatic brain injury, MTBI, tends not to have any superficial permanent structural changes. In MTBI, we see more of the deep white matter type of injury. That kind of injury, surprisingly, is not usually evident on MRI scanning either. We and a number of other groups around the country developing more sophisticated methods to try to see those deep injury to the white matter, but MRIs tend to be rather insensitive. Those injuries can accrue with time. Sometimes there can be an evolution over a few days of some of the white matter deep injury, and that has a potential for therapeutic intervention. which is being explored in some animal models now, using drugs that can protect against this secondary energy failure-induced structural changes in the brain. But those injuries will also get better with time, but they take longer because when white matter fibers are stretched or, in the worst cases, snapped, it takes weeks to months for them to myelinate, to re-insulate. If they're snapped, they're snapped forever. But usually it's a stretch or a shear, and they can resume function, but it could take weeks to months.
So it sounds like our understanding of white matter injuries is relatively recent, and that would explain then why the headlines about football players and ongoing injuries and impacts, we thought these were all temporary and permanent and recoverable. And you're saying white matter injuries are cumulative and cause real problems. And as you said, a snap is permanent.
Right. So I wish it was that simple. And I think you're on the scent, which is that this deeper, perhaps more silent injury may lead to some of the long-term problems. But it's looking now as if there's another piece to the puzzle. And when there's injury to the axons, not just the sheath surrounding the fiber that insulates it, but the actual part of the nerve cell that connects from one place to another, there can be products that are degraded and extravasated, by which we mean secreted locally. And it may be that the deposition of those products is contributing to neurodegenerative changes that occur weeks, months, decades later, that links concussion in football players with what you've heard about in the media, CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. We really haven't been able to connect the dots between acute injury and long-term risk for neurodegenerative changes and CTE. They are increased in football players, but most football players don't get it. So we don't understand the genetic factors that may confer protection and resilience, as well as those that may confer vulnerability. The neurodegenerative changes seem to be across the board in memory and risk for Parkinson's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, and some of the dementias. But again, it's a very small fraction. And one of the interesting pieces to the puzzle was just revealed in a study that looked at professional football players and compared the day when they started to the ultimate risk. There seems to be some unique vulnerability of the developing brain, the earlier hits that accrue over decades and render players who started early before puberty at greater risk for these long-term changes. We think that may be related to the fact that before puberty, athletes and non-athletes don't have the strap muscles in their neck that can be protective against the inertial blow of a concussion. They have weaker necks. So when they take a hit, the same hit leads to greater forces inside the skull, with that brain hitting the skull and the fibers getting stretched because the neck muscles aren't strong enough to be protective. And that's why they're saying wait till 14 for tackle football and wait for 14 for heading the ball in soccer. Interestingly, women never develop the strap muscles that men do, and that may be why after puberty they're at greater risk for concussion when gender matched in sports such as basketball and soccer.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Fascinating discussion right now with somebody who's on the forefront of understanding and working with pediatric concussions, Dr. Barry Kosofsky. He's the director of Pediatric Concussion Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian Hospital. We're curious about some of the most common symptoms of a concussion that can be spotted early and alert the people around the person whether they need to have any medical intervention. And then what is that medical intervention? How is it diagnosed?
So the problem with concussion is it's a symptomatic diagnosis. We do not yet have a blood test or a CAT scan or an MRI that can say whether or not you had a concussion. If you're symptomatic after taking a blow to the head, you had a concussion. So what can those symptoms be? The most common ones are headache and dizziness, impaired balance, confusion, mental fogginess, lack of focus and attention. But in the acute setting on the sideline, what they're looking for in terms of an emergency is nausea, vomiting, lethargy, meaning sleepiness, and focal numbness or weakness, an inability to move part of the body or to feel sensation in part of the body. Those are potential neurosurgical emergencies. As we talked about, if the surface of the brain takes a hit, sometimes blood can accumulate. That blood can lead to some of the symptoms that we mentioned, the nausea, the vomiting, the bad headache, the imbalance, or the weakness or numbness of an extremity. Those patients should or athletes should go to the emergency room because in that case, a CAT scan can reveal blood in or around the brain that may be a neurosurgical emergency. So now I freaked out all of your listeners to say that this could be life-threatening. It's a very, very small fraction of patients who get concussed who need to go to the emergency room for a CAT scan and subsequently will need a surgical procedure. Of patients with the symptoms I mentioned, which are the most significant, only 12% of them will have anything on CAT scan suggestive of blood in or around the brain, and of those, only a small fraction would need neurosurgical intervention.
Can sports-related concussions be prevented?
They could be minimized, but not entirely prevented. We're doing a better job now with new helmet technology with football, but football is an inherently dangerous sport, and you cannot fully prevent the risk of injury.
What are some of the new protocols that have been put in place to prevent long-term complications from concussion?
Well, there's two sets of protocols. There's something called a SCAT-2, which is a sideline protocol that's being used more to diagnose patients acutely on the sideline. We're now using new technology. There's goggles that are being deployed in the Pac-12 football league. If a football player gets his bell rung and they put a goggle on and he can't follow a dot around the circle, he gets pulled from the game. So I think we're doing a little bit better on the sideline. After you're out of that acute period, there's a number of other assessments that we're developing. It turns out that we have to evaluate your neck, your balance, your vision, and eye tracking, as well as other factors like your risk for anxiety and migraine, which are relevant in terms of being predictors of those people who are going to have more protracted symptoms.
They used to advise not allowing a person suspected of having a concussion to sleep more than a few hours at a time. In fact, many parents were told to wake up their sleeping child every few hours. Has that advice changed?
It has. So that goes back to my initial discussion about the blood on the brain. There's a rare complication of concussion called an epidural hematoma. That's what Natasha Richardson died from. And the problem is that when she hit the snow when she was skiing, I believe without a helmet, she had an initial lucid period, and then she got sleepy. And that's when her brain actually started swelling to the point where it was the cause of her death. And it was too late by the time they brought her actually to our hospital for emergency surgery from Canada. So that's the problem that people talk about, that there's a honeymoon period, they get initial confusion, then they're lucid, and then they start slipping away. And if you miss that window of opportunity for the intervention, then that can be lethal. Very rare, very uncommon. and we're going further away from it when we don't see anybody who has the nausea, the vomiting, the sleepiness in that initial period of the first few hours after a concussion.
Dr. Barry Kosofsky is director of the Pediatric Concussion Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian Hospital. Thank you for your insight into concussions.
My pleasure.